Poet Marjorie Maddox, reading here from her collection, Rules of the Game, Baseball Poems.
Home run. Anything less is a slice. Hungry, you want the whole pie. With the ball out of sight past the wall, you crave every last crumb of the run as you trot with arms held high from plate to plate to plate, all the way back to home. Your fans deliciously happy, stuffed full of satisfaction, unable to ask for one bite more of such scrumptious summer joy.
Marjorie Maddox is a master at helping us as readers feel the exhilaration of a high point like this in our own lives, in this case, literally, in others, figuratively. It's not an achievement of an isolated individual. It's a home run from a member of a baseball team. And it's the player's sheer talent and training and discipline that all play into the moment of perfect timing, bat, ball, stance, all bringing the fans together to celebrate a lovely sense of raucous community. Marjorie Maddox is not sentimental in her poetry, though. She knows the pain, the darkness and struggle in our lives, which, of course, by contrast, makes these home run-like movements even sweeter. Note her reference to pies and sweetness in that poem itself. Take baseball. As much as she loves the game and its place in American lore and life, she's aware of the darkness of its past. For example, here's an important story. She is the great-grandniece of baseball legend Branch Rickey, the general manager of the Brooklyn Dodgers who helped break the color barrier by signing Jackie Robinson. She knows that history very well. Soon she'll read for us a poem from a new collection that's titled Small Earthly Space. It's a poem that celebrates old-fashioned memorial days of yore with picnic favorites, parades, and all the hoopla. And yet, always, there is the shadow of mortality that marks the very meaning of the holiday itself. Marjorie holds that tension brilliantly, as we'll hear. Memorial, of course, as a word, is derived from Latin roots, ultimately from memoria, memory. Memory is an important theme in Marjorie's recent book, Seeing Things, issued at the end of February, and she has found an inspired way to hold the tension we've just described between the darkness in our lives and the home run moments of exhilaration. Marjorie Hafer Maddox is Professor Emeritus of English and Creative Writing at the Lock Haven campus of Commonwealth University. 2023 Monson Arts Fellow, a poetry editor of Presence, and host of WPSU Radio's Poetry Moment. We had a chance to speak with her by phone about three recent books she's released, Seeing Things, Small Earthly Space with photographer Karen Elias, and How Can I Look It Up When I Don't Know How It's Spelled?
Seeing Things is a book that came out at the end of February from Wild House Publishing, and it's probably the most difficult book that I've ever written because it deals with a mother, a daughter of a mother in the early stages of dementia, a mother caring for a daughter who is struggling with depression, and then this very blurry line in society that keeps becoming, I think, more extreme, blurry line between truth and lie. And I wrote much of this at a writing retreat in 2018, and partway through, I decided I was going to weave throughout a series of odes because I kind of needed that as an uplift, and I think the readers need that as well to kind of balance these things that many of us experience as caregivers and seeing both those tough things that we face, but also the kind of glorious things we experience along the way. And then Small Earthly Space is a book that came out of this wonderful collaboration that I have with several books now with the photographer Karen Elias, who lives in Lock Haven. And she has just these brilliant photographs, collages. And the book really focuses on the environment and on both, I guess, the human condition and the environmental threat. And we follow this curlew bird, kind of throughout the nation, throughout the country, and throughout all these different environmental threats. And I'm pleased to have endorsements by PA poet Julia Kasdorf, Todd Davis, and Katie Hayes for this book. But it's an ecstatic collection where I'm responding to Karen's photography, and often she is responding to my poem. So it's a real collaboration. The last new book is How Can I Look It Up When I Don't Know How It's Spelled? Spelling Mnemonics and Grammar Tricks, which is a book I really wrote about 20 years ago, and it's just come to light now. And partly because I have the opportunity to work with Karen, and she made these whimsical graphic reactions to things like I before E, except after C. The principal is your pal. When two vowels go walking, the first does the talking. Those little tricks that we learned in grammar school to help us to remember how to spell things. And also the grammar things like when do you put the apostrophe in it? When do you use who and whom? When do you use me or I? So all those things are kind of woven into this book, a book really for teens and also for adults, for teachers, for writers, for anybody who either loves spelling or hates it, I guess.
And one of the things that we can see just now, Marjorie, you titled your collection Seeing Things. And of course, metaphorically, there are many meanings for seeing. And then you have the book where you and Karen the photographer, and you're seeing things in her work, and she's seeing or hearing things and translating what she experiences in your work into visual images. And the question that we might ask is, what about the large sense of seeing, how we understand as we grow, how we misunderstand, and as you suggested, the boundaries changing as the time goes, what do we see and understand as our reality, and how do we wrestle with it, and does poetry help us in that?
Oh, I couldn't put it better myself. I think that's exactly what these books deal with, and a lot of what writing in general deals with is that observation, not only the small, tiny things, but how do those things serve as metaphor or serve as example or serve as opportunity to see things on a larger scale and to understand, to empathize with others, to put yourself, you know, in different places in the world and see through other people's eyes.
And were you, as a young Marjorie, reading and learning in school or on your own poetry, for example, were you required by your teachers to memorize poems, if we're speaking about poetry and memory?
You know, I wasn't too much. There were a few that I memorized, but I was just a real book nerd. Used to sit in a tree and read all the time. And, you know, I was always having a book and making up book clubs for other people, including my little sister, forcing her to read so many books a week. So, you know, the words seep in. And I think that you remember them that way. So I don't think I had that so much as an assignment, but, you know, it becomes part of you as you're reading over and over again. And I also compose aloud quite a bit, and so speak the words. So I'm very attentive to the way words sound in relationship to other words in the sentence or the stanza.
You do value the everyday, the object, the detail, as you used the word, the small thing, and that can speak volumes. If we're grounded in that, then we can speculate.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to start often from where you are. The wonderful thing about collaboration is sometimes it takes me to places that I didn't expect to be. You know, Karen may take a photograph of something that I would not have thought about writing about, and so it kind of moves me, but then I'm there. You know, then I'm there in that photograph and in that image and in that place, connecting it to other ideas, experiences, thoughts about the world, etc. But yeah, you're kind of starting, you know, from where you are, looking around you, your own experiences or the experiences of others that you're writing about. So those kind of basic details are very important in the grounding, as you say.
The word that I read in what you shared with us about seeing things, lament, and lament is a powerful word and a concept, and we may not do it very often. But that is so important. If we don't acknowledge the pain that we feel, certainly not in a self-indulgent way. But isn't it important to get those sorts of feelings that we have instead of tamping them down?
I think it is very important. And I haven't always been good at that, but I think that's why this book was difficult for me to write, because I did address some, you know, very hard subjects. And yet, after having read some of the poems and done some initial book launches, I've had so many people come up and thank me for expressing some things that they also have been through that are very similar. And that makes it worth it. You know, that makes you think, okay, it's important to say these words. It's important to write about them. It's important to draw in that community of people who've been through similar situations. And you gain hope and you gain support through that, I think, not as a therapy session, but as, you know, this is an experience that you can share, a work of art that you can share that can resonate with others because of maybe something similar that they've been through, or they know someone else who is going through it.
Do you have a sample from Seeing Things?
I could read you one short one about my mother's early stages of dementia. And then later, if you want one ode, I can give you an ode as well.
Yes, please.
This is entitled Dusk, and it's a sonnet. The way the clouds hang low, it could be noon or late fall. She doesn't know the season or the time. In her mind, the days make room for meals, for bathroom trips. No reason to remember where, why. She knows someone will arrive to take her there, will prepare the necessary plans, will know the when of her leaving, the coat she'll need to wear to brace herself from cold. Perhaps it's snow that filters out the light. Perhaps it's dusk, the long chill drawing close. And yet, she hopes it's spring, late day, the world's worries hushed as she slips now towards sleep. Always the gray darkens to night. She does not know the day. During COVID, my mother was in Phoenix near my sister in an assisted living facility, so that was particularly tough being so far away while she was going through some of this. And then I can read you the last poem in this particular book just to kind of show that balance. Ode to everything. Enough of the lamentations. Open the window and sing. The world is awash with world. Color dripping globe always tilting into some ah or another. Clouds stretching wide, plump happiness. Even the noisy stage show of showers. Such sunny ovations, and the birds, overpopulating every poem, swoop here for free. Swallows, hawk, robin, gull, eagle, what else can be written but wings that wave horizon to horizon? And enough of windows, craze doors, step out with arms open and eyes gathering vim and vision. Grandeur trailing from worm and woodchuck, branch puzzles of woods, open boat of breeze, all brimming with hey and hallelujah and celebrate, such green giving of thanks, such miraculous mercy of earth, calm valley, and even this rugged, rocky chain we claim now as family, claiming praise as respite, holding close each breaking day, dangerous yet divine in all its gorgeous glory.
How exquisite. And to hear the ode right after dusk, a dramatic difference in terms of not just the way you read the ode as opposed to the way you read dusk, but the sound of dusk versus the energy that is in the ode for us. Tell us a little bit about the choice of doing dusk as a sonnet and how you used the characteristics of that form to help us get a feeling of dementia as reflected in your handling of dusk.
Well, I think I often, or more and more, maybe a better way to say it, more and more choose fixed forms when I'm dealing with topics that are maybe a little more tricky or difficult for me to approach. And that gives me kind of a framework. And in a sonnet, too, you have that turn at the end, right? So you kind of turn from the dark. You're going back and forth between the dark and the light throughout that. And dusk is, you know, that in-between time, so it's hard to know, you know, ties in with that truth and lies and seeing things and not being able to be confident maybe in what you're seeing or remembering. There's a lot about memory in the book, too, and trying to define or pinpoint which memories are accurate and which may not be. So I think that, you know, kind of turning, there's a lot of enjambment where you're wrapping around from one line to another, which I think kind of ties in with that idea of the early stages of dementia. You're not sure which direction you're going, and it kind of takes these turns throughout.
At the same time, the ode is joy-filled, but you're not sentimental. And that has a lot to do with the fact that your words and images are so fresh and so alive.
Right. And you know, honesty is one of the things that is important in poetry and in literature, right? You want to try to look at things as honestly as you can. It's not always easy to do, but maybe not even as possible as other times, but, you know, you try.
What about then taking us to small earthly space and that conversation so alive?
Right. And you know, honesty is one of the things that is important in poetry and in literature, right? You want to try to look at things as honestly as you can. It's not always easy to do, but
What about then taking us to small earthly space and that conversation you and Karen had, a sample of the way one of you has reacted to the other?
Okay, so I think I will read you a poem that has to do with the curlew birds. There's probably, I can't remember, maybe 10 or 12 poems that have to do with curlews, a number of poems that have to do with poppies. So this is one that was after the 2018 wildfire in Curlew, Washington, but it reminds me, of course, of what just happened fairly recently in California. This image that Karen has is as a curlew bird over the map, kind of imprinted on a map of Curlew, Washington, and you can see kind of the destruction that's taken place. The witnesses, near the confluence of Long Alec Creek and the Kettle River, the curlew watches its namesake, town of 100, as residents stare toward the west, inhale fear. Smoke rewrites the sky where the curlew once flew. Flames attack its map and habitat. Ridgelines pulse with what is singed, feathers, pines, mountains, horizons streaked with regret and the burnt promises of those not there to witness the incineration of branch, the contagion of spark, the long, slow burn of loss. O curlew and curlews, obscure enough to hide once within these safe acres, even you, grief has found, even you.
And that is a lament in its way, isn't it, Marjorie?
Yes, yes, very much so. I think, you know, for all the environmental threats, for all the wildfires, for what's happened to the creatures, the ecology, and just kind of looking around and seeing what's happened to the earth recently. So we're doing a number of presentations around Earth Day. We've already done several exhibits and readings combined, which is a really wonderful experience, I think, at Lycoming Arts Gallery and the Station Gallery, and the first one in Williamsport, second one in Lock Haven, but we'll be reading and presenting for Earth Day at the Belfont Art Museum in Belfont on April 22nd from 6 to 8. That is, yeah, a great experience. I have one on Memorial Day.
Yes, please, please.
So this is one where I kind of combined both humor, but there's a serious undertone as well. When I was growing up, Memorial Day was my favorite holiday. I just loved it. We would have parades, and then we would always go to the graveyards of my older relatives, which were in southern Ohio, and we go to a farm by one of the aunts and swing on the tree swings and ride the horses. So that was kind of the inspiration. Karen's image is a tombstone that says, and it's labeled Death by Blueberry, and then it has the recipe for blueberry pie on the tombstone. So that's what I was responding to. Memorial Weekend. Better Than Halloween, Great Aunt Julia's Farm, and Horses and Rope Swings and Barns Swore of All Unsuburban Smells, and Family Cemeteries to Run Through, and Hometown Parades with Paper Mache, Chicken Coop Wire, All-American Floats and Flags and Flowers, and Fake Cigars and Scary Clowns, and Backyard Picnics of Large Bowls of Chunky Potato Salad, and Adults Talking on the Sun Porch, and Pie, 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 and Just a Kid, and Not Knowing Death Lurked Everywhere, Farm and Cemeteries and Gardens and Parades, and Even Chunky Potato Salad, and Blueberry and Dutch Apple, and Lemon Meringue and Key Lime and Rhubarb and Pear and Blackberry and Chocolate Cream Pie Recipes Passed Down from the Dead to the Dead to the Dead to the Almost Dead to the Living, Like Always, Even Now, With Kids and Grandkids, When We No Longer Talk Pies, Only the Dead, Only the Mourned For Bakers.
Oh, you're right, Marjorie. There's humor there and all that youthful energy. We can feel it running down the street. But there is that sense, mortality and the whole root of the holiday to remember the dead. And now a sample from the delightful spelling and grammar book.
Okay, so how can I look it up when I don't know how it's spelled? Spelling mnemonics and grammar tricks. I guess I talked about it a little bit before, but it's for readers and writers, for those who run away from spelling and those who embrace it, really for teens and adults. It's a fun book, a whimsical book with whimsical illustrations. And here's a short piece. If you're ever confused about how to spell dessert versus desert, here's a way to remember. A double helping of S, please. Yes, I'll take another S in my dessert. Another slice of strudel, an extra sampling of strawberry shortcake, a smidgen more of spritz, twin pecan tassies, double cheesecake snack squares. No thank you, please. Not a single desert, that dusty Sahara sandbox, where I crave scores of sibilations to satisfy this persistent thirst for all that's sweet and sugary. So there's a little tidbit to keep you hungry, I guess.
Spelling and grammar, that's fun. Thanks. Where will you be with Seeing Things, Marjorie, next?
I will be at Otto's Bookstore on April 12th with a number of other poets for Celebrate the Poets' Day. So they're having poets from 10 in the morning to 5 in the evening. And I will be reading and selling books and talking with people, answering questions from noon to 1. At Otto Bookstore on West 4th Street in Williamsport.
How can we follow you, Marjorie? Website?
Yes, it's www.marjoriemaddox.com.
Marjorie Hafer Maddox, poet and professor emeritus of English and creative writing at the Lock Haven campus of Commonwealth University, 2023 Monson Arts Fellow, a poetry editor of Presence, and a radio person, host of WPSU Radio's Poetry Moment. We've been speaking about three recent books she's released: Seeing Things, Small Earthly Space with photographer Karen Elias, and How Can I Look It Up When I Don't Know How It's Spelled. There will be a book launch for Seeing Things, which has been released on February 28th of this year by Wild House Publishing, and that will be at Otto Bookstore in Williamsport, Saturday, April 12th, from 1 to 2. Small Earthly Space, released by Shanti Arts in January of this year, will have a book launch for Earth Day at the Belfont Art Museum on April 22nd, from 6 to 8. And then the fun book, How Can I Look It Up When I Don't Know How It's Spelled, Spelling, Mnemonics, and Grammar Tricks, released by Kelsey Books. The book launch was in January at the Lycoming Arts Gallery. For more information, you can check Marjorie's own website, and that's marjoriemaddox.com. marjoriemaddox.com, M-A-D-D-O-X, marjoriemaddox.com. You can meet her, you can talk to her on the 12th of April from 1 to 2 at Otto Bookstore in Williamsport. And for more information about the remarkable writings that she has produced, marjoriemaddox.com. MarjorieMaddox.com.